You are listening to episode 153 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, The Portal to Posting.
Welcome to episode 153 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is September the 1st, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my completely clothed brother, James Furlough.
Yes, I am completely clothed.
Yes, I'm glad to hear that.
Wait, hold on. Okay, there we go. Got my sound right. Cool. That was bad. I'm completely clothed. You know, I also couldn't help... I can't turn this stupid... Hold up. Having technical difficulties here in the morning. There.
Hey, man, it's early.
Just close the picture. It'll go away. My little... the little tray wasn't coming out, so...
Oh, weird.
I don't know what to do about that.
Come on, Apple.
You know, I couldn't help but notice that you weren't dancing to the music this morning.
You know, it's because it's this morning. Yeah. Okay. I'm completely clothed, too.
That's good. That was more
a reference to the evidently only topic in the tech news media. Actually, it's the cross-section of four different stories this morning. It's pop culture, you know, little starlets. That was probably a demeaning term. calling them little starlets. Wow. Tech media.
I'd be a starlet if you gave me the chance.
Yeah, well, I guess calling them little starlets is probably the...
I'd be a little starlet. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then there's the cross-section of, like, you know, security and the whole NSA data stuff, that story that's going on, and, like, and just the scandalousness of, you know, nude celebrities. It's just, like, the perfect story for America right now. A bunch of celebrities getting all their pictures leaked, and it's funny. I have like, I feel awful for them, and that's about the extent of my interest, which is why I'm bringing it up during the show intro.
My interest lasted as much as I saw the titles and went swipe next.
Yeah, I don't know.
So you know more than I do.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, it's I checked to make sure it wasn't Apple's fault, and because that's the first thing everybody jumped to is that blaming iCloud. Somebody hacked iCloud, and everybody's gone, probably not. Probably they just somehow stole everybody's, you know, these iCloud account passwords, and that's how they got in. It's not Apple's fault if the celebrities don't protect their password stuff, which it's not Apple's fault.
I mean, well, they could require tougher passwords, okay?
Yeah, that's true.
It's all
well, Apple's gonna come back and say, "How about you use Keychain next time?" And then, you know, and that's why we're coming out with the fingerprint scanners. Boom, 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 boom.
Damn, love it.
But yeah, so
I'm pumped
anyways,
for that. By the way.
Yeah,
I think it's totally unrelated, but it's related. I think I'm gonna sell my phone on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Because Lifehacker came out with a post that was like, here's where to trade in your phones. And they were specifically talking about the iPhone, but I'm pretty sure it works for all phones. Dude, Amazon gives you crazy money. Well, I mean, it's a gift card, but I mean, that's the equivalent of money.
That is the equivalent of money.
Amazon. It's nuts.
Interesting. I'll have to check that out.
I was going to go with Gazelle because, you know, they were smart. They got the email offer. I'm like, oh, we'll lock you in until you get your new phone. But they're one of the lowest ones, so I'm like,
That's just how they are able to give you that deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. I might check that out too. I do, evidently, I've had like four people come up to, so I did mention to you that I think I've decided I'm not going to buy the iPhone 6.
No, you did not mention that to me.
Not going to buy the iPhone 6. I am going to buy...
Oh, wait, you did.
Yeah, I did. I was going to say this.
Hey, can you turn on, like, do you have like a light on your desk or something? I'm talking to your shadow, to your silhouette.
One second, James. Do I have a light? Let me see.
Yes. Walked into that one. Oh, that's beautiful.
That's better. Yeah.
I hear a red silhouette. I love it.
Well,
it's actually your window. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Just get rid of your window.
I wish, honestly, James, There are some mornings when I do occasionally get to sleep in, and I want to get rid of my window too, because it's annoying.
When I back in the day when I graduated college and was living on my own, I my bedroom was also the t-shirt print shop.
Yeah, right.
And there's a process there that is light sensitive, and so I totally blacked out with the help of multiple layers of trash bags. My windows, it was always dark.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. Except I like the breathing, the breath of during the winter is not so bad. But anyways, what I was going to say is I've decided I'm not getting an iPhone 6. I'm instead going to get a Nexus 5.
Wow, look at you.
And then after 30 days, I'm going to return it.
That sounds more like you.
I say, and then I'm going to get the, I haven't decided. I feel like I should do at least three phones again. I did that last year, but doing two Android phones and then an iPhone seems kind of lame. But what other phone would I try?
BlackBerry.
Because I feel like, yeah. You know what? Go away. I'm done with the show. I like the, you know, Windows Phone, and I got to think about it a while.
They've upgraded. Then, they've got new special live tiles or something.
I'll get the, right. and then, you know, and I can try the new Nokia feature, so I might do that, and then...
You should get the one with the 42 megapixel camera.
Oh, you know what? Maybe that's what I will do. That's what I will do, because I've wanted to try that thing out for a long time. I'll figure out. That's what I'll do. And then, probably, you know, round it all out with the iPhone 5. But the cool part is that because I'm...
The iPhone 5, wow, man.
Tell me. The iPhone 6, whatever. Who knows what it's going to be called? Maybe they'll be like Nintendo and just call it the new iPhone 5, even though it's the iPhone 6, which... It's a story we'll talk about later.
Are we? Did we? Oh, you did highlight it.
Good. Oh, I did highlight it because it's the end. It's the end of my beloved company, and I can see it coming. I finally have embraced it fully, and I will get into that.
To help them out, are you going out and getting the new? Is that what they're calling it? The new 3DS?
We'll talk about it later,
okay,
James.
Sorry. Jumping the gun here.
So yeah, I know. That's what we call a tease in the teasing business.
I'm sorry.
But you know what, James? We're not here to talk about that this week. Actually, we are totally here to talk about this week.
It's just, not right now, though.
It's in my notes to say that. So, but this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology they are developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, Jim's got a short disclosure he wants to throw our way.
I work for HP, but I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Nice. If you want to follow us throughout the week, look at our social media sites and see what we're doing and what's going on and stuff, you can totally do that. We would love to have you along for the ride. My Instagram is nextwiggin4, NEXTWIGGIN, and the number 4. I mentioned that because my PlayStation Network gamertag happens to be the same thing, nextwiggin4. And then my Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow, one word.
I'm James Furlow, everywhere.
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 Nice.
Put an at symbol before it, put a .com after it, everywhere.
Makes it easy. Just Google James Furlow and you'll find him.
That works too.
And then Furlow Bros is furlowbros.com. That's kind of the cool place for the cool kids to go. If you want to check that out, we got all sorts of clicks and links there. Everything that we talk about this week, all the articles, the YouTube, the podcast, whatevskis, check it out. Go there. It's awesome. It's fun. It's a good time. It's a media bonanza, as some have described it. Nobody's described it that way, except me.
You're somebody.
Nice. You know what? Thank you.
You
appreciate that.
Totally. We gotta support each other.
I guess we'll just get into it now.
Yeah.
So, did you watch the Emmys on Monday?
There were the Emmys on Monday.
Yes.
Actually, I think I did. I watched a highlight reel or whatever of like, here's 15 minutes of the best parts.
That's actually what I meant. When I ask people if they watched a TV show nowadays, what I meant is, did you watch the YouTube highlights?
Yeah, I did then.
So then, yes.
thoroughly enjoyed it, too.
Which is a special irony of the fact that I just described it that way, seeing how it's a show about giving awards for TV shows. They had some funny highlights.
Which no internet TV shows won anything.
Right. See, and that was what we were gonna get.
Sorry,
at. No, that's all right. No, it's hey, man. You're all about jumping the gun this morning, but that's okay. You were only one sentence ahead of me this time.
Okay,
instead of the entire show ahead of me. So basically, the big highlight coming out of this was, the big joke at the beginning that Seth Meyers, the host of the Emmys, made was how it's a network. Made award show, and there were like no network TV shows that were there, and everybody else is going to win because Netflix had a bunch of nominations, and HBO had a bunch of nominations, and Showtime, and everybody, and a bunch of shows that nobody watches because they cost real money. whereas the networks, they did not have very many awards, but. What's really fascinating about it and interesting, and it's funny, the title of this Quartz article is Emmy voters just did what the networks couldn't stop Netflix, which is, there's this fear on the network side of, their media, their bread and butter going away. But at the same time, they can't, ignore what they're doing completely, or they get totally lambasted if they do ignore it. So when it came down to the voting time, it's funny. I'm mixed on this because on one hand it's like, yeah, Kevin Spacey didn't win anything for House of Cards, and he probably should have. But he is also going toe-to-toe with the last season of Breaking Bad.
Which, don't tell me about it. I'm in the middle of season 3 right now.
Wow. Are you loving it or what?
It's okay. I hear season 4 is amazing.
Okay.
Sorry, that wasn't like a ringing endorsement. It's amazing.
Yeah,
like get through it, and then once you're through it, you're like, that was amazing.
Well, okay, I'll be totally honest with you, James. I'm going to start lowering your expectations a little bit, because by the time I was into season 3, I decided the show was amazing, and I loved it. So you might want to tap the brakes on your expectations of season 4 if you're not already loving season 3.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Well,
my problem is, there have been clear places where I'm like, you could have chosen not to do that.
Oh yeah.
I realize that it's a TV show, and if you had chosen not to do that, it would be the end of the TV show. I get that. But I don't feel bad for you.
Yeah. Well.
So
yeah. We'll talk about it once you're done with the show.
Okay. Okay.
Anyways. Talking about Netflix and the different shows that they put out there, are arguably very good, and they've gotten a big following. At the same time, it's like, I don't know. I guess I just thought it was interesting that this was viewed as such a referendum on Netflix and the networks and everybody. And I wonder if, what everybody's kind of like walking around saying, oh, this is totally unfair that Netflix didn't win, and this is, this is them protecting their little domain. I wonder if that's true versus the fact that, And legitimately, I will acknowledge that there's a lot of politics that go into these award shows. It's not the best show that wins. It's a lot of, vote for you. I'll vote for you for this if you vote for me for that. And,
how are the winners chosen again? How is this one done?
I think it's like the Academy where they're, it's weird. Well, it's weird. It's like it can be as few as like a few dozen people voting for particular categories of different stuff. It's not like the Academy where it's kind of a free for all where you get the entire Academy going, but it's and they build up these coalitions of people that all kind of vote together. Whereas this one, it's like, yeah, it's and then you
have to be a game made about that.
Yeah, right. Actually, I think it would be an interesting, a fascinating movie. If you were to pick a movie and make a, you know...
Oh, yes, a meta movie, behind the scenes, the Academy Award. Oh, yeah, and they should dramatize it all up like they normally do for movies.
Mm-hmm.
Dude,
mm-hmm.
That'd be awesome. Oh, man. Oh, dude, that's a brilliant idea.
And if you
pick just a gave
movie,
a brilliant idea.
Dang it.
If it gets done, you could be like, I thought of that, and that was a brilliant idea.
Yeah, well, and Peter Jackson's famously said that the only reason that the second Lord of the Rings didn't win as many awards as it did is because he wasn't willing to work as hard to get it to win the awards that the first and third got, you know, and because as far as he was concerned, he made three really great movies, and he spent as much energy winning awards for the first and third as he did making the movies, and then the second one. I think also arguably, you know, because it was 3 years in a row, they wanted to keep their powder dry for the third one, you know, get a bunch of awards for the first one, get momentum going for the series, and then because to them,
I wonder if he thought like he wouldn't have to work as hard because he won a lot. Second movie was just as good, so if not better, it's like, so I got this. And then it turned out he didn't and went, oh, I gotta put in the work.
Yeah, that possibly.
That's interesting. But oh, dude, I am like so stuck on that idea. That's a brilliant, amazing idea.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We are not going to talk about the other ideas that this week that you and I have had that we didn't capitalize on and now somebody else is making money on because they're not as interesting as the rest of what's going on this week. But this is a feeling. This has been a theme for me this week. Yeah. Okay. I'll bring it up briefly. There's a Kickstarter campaign going on right now for the for a Bluetooth-enabled plug that plugs into your car, into the computer brain thing, that gives you all the diagnosis information, and it connects to an app. It's like a $50 little dongle. You just plug it into your car, and then you get constant information, and you no longer have to go to the what's that thing called?
Gas station.
A shop to get them to read all the codes for you.
I thought we talked about that before.
We have. It's just that this is the first time somebody else is finally doing it for reals, which is a bummer. It's not a bummer. It was a good idea. See, I knew it was a good idea.
There you go.
I don't know. But I guess what I come back to is like I'm not trying to say that there isn't.
I feel like too that couldn't be it couldn't be a serious movie. You know.
No.
It would have to be like. I don't know why I'm thinking like Snatch off the top of my head style, but or maybe like Ocean's 11-esque, which is you know, I don't know, which that would actually be appropriate because you have stars everywhere.
Yeah,
but anyways,
actually that would be man, that would be okay. That's good. We gotta find who do we call?
Yes. Yeah.
So
you got a friend, right? Kyle, doesn't he?
Yeah, right. Yeah, you hear that, Kyle?
Yeah.
So,
I'll yell at Timmy real quick about it.
All right. Yo, what is it?
He'll get it contextually. Oh, like, oh, I get it.
Oh, my gosh. So, there was a wedding. Friends of our family got married. And so, quite a few of our family members were at this wedding yesterday. And by 10:30, they were all rather drunk. And I started getting yo's from Timmy. Just yo, yo. Yo, and I like yo'd him back, and then I get more yo's, and finally he called me. He goes, no, and drunkenly he's like, "I want you."
Oh no!
Oh
wait, say that again. Say that last part. No, I want you.
I want you to yo me, like yo. I was like, "What are you talking?" I was like, "It's just a yo." He's like, "No. It's yo. And so I like hit it like three times in a row like this, and they're like that. He's like, yeah. He goes, do it again. And like, because one of our uncles wanted to hear it saying yo. And oh my gosh, they were rather excited about the whole yo.
Well, I enabled them last night, so.
Nice.
Oh yeah, we got into a little yo war.
Oh
we
man.
We didn't stop at three.
That's awesome.
And then I started sending them Yos with links to a picture of Yo.
That's awesome. So this is how did I get onto this topic? But anyways, the whole idea of, I don't know. I wonder if this is less a referendum on Netflix and their whole, like, you know, oh, they're not, you know, whoever the Emmys, they're like, you know, they're keeping Netflix out, so much as there is just still a really lot of great TV on cable channels, you know, and
yeah, that's a good question, because I mean, because clearly there's been some pushback, right? And how do I want to say it? Like, even the title, right, of this article on Quartz is Emmy voters just did something that the networks couldn't, which is stop Netflix. But it's this idea of, I think everyone who watched it went, huh, that's weird that Netflix didn't win. Not because they think that, you know, Netflix is taking over, but because Netflix had genuinely good TV show offerings.
Yeah.
And so the fact that they didn't win, it feels weird. You know, it would have been one thing to be like, yeah, you know, they just wasn't as good, you know, or at least had it been some sort of external measure and they didn't win, you go, huh, they must not be as good as we thought. Instead, yeah, it's the opposite. We're all going, huh, we kind of thought they would have won. There must be something screwy about the system.
Yeah.
And
I think there legitimately is, but it's not necessarily what everybody suspects, which is that Breaking Bad split its season into two different Emmy races, so that the first half of season 6 was part of the last year's Emmys, and the second half was part of the early one on this year's Emmys. And I think what happened was, is you had, and so that they got, basically this was sort of like the show achievement awards is what they became, even though they were, you know, they're technically judging it on one episode of a TV series. And so you know, because, and it's so weird how they do the voting. But it, you know, it became, it's like, why, you know, did I personally don't think that, what's his name? The dude from Breaking Bad, his best acting was in the last season. I thought it was some very good acting, but I'm not sure that he, you know, that, but I think the reason they gave it to him is because it was the last season of Breaking Bad, and his overall acting for the entire show was pretty, you know, pretty stellar. So you give it to him for the whole thing, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas it's like House of Cards, and it's funny, House of Cards, like, I realize is a good show and everything, but a lot of the critics early on, they really heavily criticized writing and overall acting and everything. And it's a compelling story. It's not necessarily worthy of, you know, beating these. I don't know. It's interesting. I do wonder if it wasn't one of those things where it was just, you know, when you really get into what critics believe, if it had less to do with where the show is coming from and more to do with the fact that, yeah, these are great shows, but, you know, the best shows won. and it's just sort of how they broke up their seasons and everything. And if nothing else, the fact that True Detectives won as little as it did should be, you know, telling to the fact that, you know, there was something weird going on. But I don't know. Or weird insofar that it's like, you know, that Breaking Bad was just sort of, it was on a mission to win everything, and it just pushed everything else out of the limelight. If Breaking Bad hadn't been part of the mix, I think Netflix would have done much better, and True Detectives would have done much better too, I guess is my point. But
and
you know,
I'm gonna go, yeah, duh.
Yeah,
right. Get rid of number one, everyone moves up. That's how that works.
Yeah, 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 yeah. If you didn't lose, you'd win.
You would have had a better outcome. Yeah,
right. And if my uncle didn't have.
That's called the pigeonhole principle, for those of you math nerds out there.
Yes. So, anywho, yeah, that's enough about the Emmys.
Okay, cool. Sorry, my real estate agent is pinging me. I'm trying to meet up with him. Stop distracting me. I'm in the middle of a podcast. All right, so I want to talk about Twitter.
Okay, let's talk Twitter.
Which, in some ways, related. But I'm all a Twitter about Twitter today.
Aha.
Yes. Because they've released a really nifty analytics dashboard. So for those of you who want to play along, head on over to analytics.twitter.com. And when it tells you you have to disable ad blocker, do that. Which I'm like, and do it just for that page. Don't do it for the whole domain. Come on, let's be smart about these boys. And girls. I'm sure there's at least one. Maybe.
It doesn't tell me that I have to do it. Huh. Your tweets are... Wow.
So it's kind of like Google Analytics, but for tweets, so you can gauge the performance of how your tweets are doing.
Not good.
So... All right. Let's talk about this. So over the last 28 days, how many impressions have you had?
A lot. Tons.
Now, come on. Give me a number. Like tons as in like 2,000?
Yeah, I literally have zero.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe it's because my ad block... I have an ad block running. Does that actually change it?
Well, does it have a chart and tweets underneath it?
No. Well, it's got tweets underneath it. But no chart.
A chart with bars?
I don't think I have any bars because I got zero impressions. This is actually kind of embarrassing to do right now. I'm hoping this is broken because...
All right. So I'm at 1.2... I'm at... What is it? It's 1,200.
Show me your... you've got a lot more followers than me, though, don't you?
That's true, probably. Here.
I go out of my way to not have any followers because I'm a loser,
okay.
Baby.
Oh, I got my panel back. Cool. All right, here we go. Start the screen share.
Yeah, see, I have that bar, James, but it's embarrassing.
All right, so...
I need more followers. How many followers do you have?
Here, let's see here. Followers. Loading. I have 396 followers as
yes,
of last
night. You have literally an order of magnitude more than I do.
So this is cool. So 55% of them are interested in marketing, how do I interpret this? This is the top five most unique interests of your followers. So marketing for 55, SEO, web design, real estate, and wine, apparently. Huh. Cool. Tech news is an interest for 160 of my followers. That's kind of cool. So it also can tell me. So we'll do followers right here. So most of them, 300 of my 396 are from the United States. 50 of those are from Oregon. California looks like it's barely winning. Wow, this popover thing is it's tied. And then I have a bunch of other. I've got 20 from Canada. How about that? Hey there. Hey, Canadians. I got most of them are from Portland, some San Francisco. I got a few in New York and Los Angeles. Very cool. Most of them are male, 75%. I feel like that should be true of most of them. Let's see here. My followers also follow Guy Kiyosaki's number 3. I know him. Very cool. So, yeah. So, and my follower count has been pretty steady, it would appear.
I wish I hadn't played along.
Sorry. So, what's interesting about the... Let's go back to the tweets. So, it'll show you... your number of impressions, which doesn't mean necessarily people have actually read it. It just your tweet happened to be in the timeline when they opened it, I think. I average, it looks like 42 per day, which I don't tweet that often, so I don't know how to fully think about that.
See, this is what's interesting to me. I literally have zeros on all of my impressions.
That's weird.
Does that mean that, like, all of you know, it's entirely possible that I literally have a list full of followers who never open up their Twitter? Well, that's impossible because you tweet at me. You respond to some of this stuff. How do I have zero impressions? I've got more engagements than I have impressions. This doesn't make any sense, James.
More engagement than impressions.
Yeah. What the heck? Okay, that makes me feel better about this. That makes me feel a lot better, because up to that point, I was feeling kind of bad. Number of users that saw the tweet on Twitter. Okay. Total number of times a user has interacted with the tweet. This includes all the clicks. Yeah, I literally have zero impressions and a handful of engagements. Because people, this is what I'm talking about.
That's weird.
This is really weird. That's super weird. What are you doing, Twitter?
I don't know. What's interesting, what's cool about it is not only does it give you that chart, but then it'll actually show your most recent tweets, which you'll notice I like to tweet out pictures. Which really, what it is, I used if this and that, where when I do Instagram, I have it automatically send it to Twitter, but as an embedded picture, not just a link to Instagram, because it's annoying, and I figured out how to get around that. And so you can see your impressions, and then the engagement, and it's kind of cool, I guess. Mm-hmm. So
especially if it works.
So it's interesting, and I don't know for the engagement, so it's like, I've got a tweet, finally got a single point in Swing Copter. I guess that means I can stop playing now, which was, like, incredibly difficult. Have you tried it, even?
Yeah.
I got up to two.
Getting the first point wasn't too bad. Getting the second point is giving me a bit of a hassle.
Yeah,
I'll be
so
honest.
Apparently the creator, he's got like 8 points. That's his best score. And they're like, what? once you play it, you'll know that's really good.
So is this the same creator as the last one? Is
Flappy Birds?
It's the same dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So you'll notice no picture, no engagement. Picture, engagement. Podcast didn't get any losers. But then pictures, our podcast doesn't get a lot, which is interesting. I don't know.
Maybe we're running into the same problem that I'm running into, which is their numbers are whack.
Yeah, I don't, somehow the tweets and replies, maybe that just combines them, and since I never reply or people don't really reply to me. I got 3 favorites in the last 28 days, I guess. A couple replies. So anyways, if you're into Twitter, you can check that out.
Well, I was into Twitter until I checked that out. Stupid. I feel bad right now, James.
Sorry. I didn't expect that, to be honest.
Yeah, well, neither did I.
How many followers do you have? You gotta start working on this.
I know, I got like 50 followers. So I'm legitimately gonna have fewer than you. But the fact that I've got zero impressions and like, I was about to say twice as many engagements, which would still be zero. But the fact that I have zero impressions and quite a few engagements, because at least you engage me on a semi-regular basis, tells me that something's whack, man. I don't know what it is, but I don't like their numbers. I don't feel good about this.
So they just released it. Maybe there's still some bugs. Who knows?
That's what I'm going with.
but kind of fun. It's analytics.twitter.com. Pretty fun. I don't know. Kids' stats are always fun to look at, and now they've opened it up.
Nice.
And from now on, every single one of my tweets will have a picture.
Right.
What if you did that by time of day? I didn't see that on there. But that would... Anyways... Is it best to tweet on a Monday or a Tuesday? Do you do it in the morning or in the afternoon? Maybe that's the problem with the podcast. I post everything at 8 a.m. to Twitter. And, so it's early morning stuff. Whereas the other stuff, they happen midday.
When everybody's already trying to ignore,
Yeah, they're all catching up on email in the morning.
It's like 8 a.m. on a Monday morning. They've got the enthusiasm of the new week. Oh, I'm totally going to get this done this week, and by noon they've already given up and it's time to
what if you could delay obviously off. I want to post the podcast, but I wonder if I could delay a tweet using if this and that. Is that possible?
I'm not sure. I don't have any idea.
If
but it seems
that,
like it,
let us know.
Yeah. So there's some other news this week.
Summer's over, man. News is happening.
Right? Yeah, man. Dog days of summer are past.
Yeah, we're all getting it's like, we got to say something, but we can't say it next week, so let's get it out now.
Right. Yeah, the next two weeks worth of news cycle are going to be filled up. So Amazon did something this week. Are you familiar with Twitch? I mean, it's been all up in the news, but do you have any idea what it is?
So from what I understand, It's essentially, if you're playing a video game, you can stream what you're playing and then also record yourself talking or, you know, either whatever, commenting, overlay it on top of it.
Yeah.
And then others watch you, right?
Pretty much. Yes, so Twitch has been, it's been rumored that they're going to get botten.
Nice.
Thank you. I sometimes I wonder if people realize that I do that sort of thing on purpose where I...
Sure you do.
Yeah. All right, good. They bought the service, or that the Google was going to buy the service, but in the rumor mill, at the very least, that Twitch was going to get bought. Who Google was what the scuttlebutt was. But this week, big news came down, and it wasn't Google. It was our good friends with Jeff, run by Jeff Bezos, at Amazon that took over the privilege of
Bam.
Running the company.
Surprise?
It was a surprise. It was a huge surprise to a lot of people because the thought was that it makes sense for Google to buy them because they got a lot of money and they own Google, and so they have the server's ability to handle the information stuff going back and forth. They've got a expanding empire of media and stuff. And I was just sort of and just the whole nature of what YouTube is, it kind of made sense for Twitch to get stitched into it because it's sort of similar. It's user created content uploaded and streamed from there. Whereas Amazon doesn't really have a streaming site so much, or a streaming user media, you know, uploaded site. They're all about the you know, their streaming media is TV shows and stuff that they're building in Amazon Prime, you know, movies and music and whatnot. So, you know, the thought was that this is a little bit outside of their, you know, realm, what they do.
Yeah.
On the flip side, they're like the predominant server space for, you know.
Yeah, that'd be really convenient for Twitch.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, I mean, you know, it's funny nowadays, like, it's if you want really, really, really great server space, you know, server serving stuff, you know, your two big options are Google and Amazon. And
HP's number three.
Yeah, totally.
Not that I represent them or anything.
Right.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's just a fact. I mean, it's not even a... It's just informational. So, yeah, I would say it's interesting. It's really interesting because Twitch is I don't get Twitch. I'm going to be totally honest. I mean, I get it. I get it in concept. And I get what
you don't
it
get
is,
why people like it.
Yeah, yeah. I get, well, and it's funny because it's like I get why I think I understand in a theoretical sense why people get it, why people like it. People who watch Twitch are sort of like the people who watch pro golf or pro, you know, I guess technically here. any type of pro sport where,
like
football, you know, and you sit down and you watch other people play a game. And these people do it very well, and so they're, you know, and so that's the excitement about it, and you get to watch a very skilled player do something and
or not,
and I just what's interesting to me is that compulsion, because to me it's like I like going to football stadiums because I like sitting with people who are, you know, fellow fans. I have never in my life sat down and watched a pro sports game on my own. Just sat down and watched this pro sports game.
Wait, what'd you do for the World Cup?
I watched it with people.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's one thing to like to sit around with other people and like have fans going at it, but it's like, but even then, I'd still rather be playing the sport. And I'm not sure what that sort of person that makes me, because I realize I'm the minority in it. But it's just, I don't know. Well, you literally own these video games. Why don't you just play the game?
Maybe you're trying to decide if you want to buy it or not. And it's a way of previewing it.
Yeah, I understand that as an argument, and I think that's part of the you know, the value proposition of Twitch. But the amount that people, the amount of video that they're streaming would suggest that that's not the, what it's being used as.
Oh yeah, that's
it's
true.
Being used as entertainment. You know, people watch Twitch to relax and chill out, and I don't want to play this video game. I want to watch somebody else play this video game. You know, and I guess if you're trying to learn new skills and stuff and see how other people who are much better than you do it, you know, okay, I guess there's some value in that. But again, you know, the you know, given how much people are watching it, the realization is that no, most people are just doing this for entertainment's sake. It's an entertainment platform. It's weird. The game is supposed to be the entertainment. This makes me feel really old, James. It makes me feel really old that I feel this way. Why can't you kids just go and play video games? Why do you have to be like this? But whatever.
So, the bigger question... I honestly, I don't think I've ever watched it.
Yeah,
at least knowingly. I might have, but, you know, I wasn't, like, ever, like, oh, let me go to Twitch and see what's playing.
Yeah.
You know, I might have watched a recording of, like, check out this amazing shot that someone did, and it was probably recorded on Twitch, and I just didn't know it.
Yeah.
Because I've watched a few of those stuff, but...
Yeah, you know, and I like those YouTube videos where you get, like, a, you know, a 30-second, wow, this is amazing, you know,
yeah.
Shots. But, you know, whatever. Whatever.
Yeah, that was so, was Twitch involved in that one, that Tiger Woods Pro Golf one?
Which one was that one?
So there was the Tiger... They made it come... Oh, it was so awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Where the guys... I don't know if it was or not. I can't remember. But essentially, they found a glitch in his golf game where the ball would land on the top of the water and they could take a shot... You know, he'd be standing on top of the water, you know,
yeah.
Jesus style, and shoot. I can't. I think he like made it too, right? You know,
it's,
like
yeah. It's Tiger Woods 09, and the and it's a YouTube video, and it's the yeah, and basically it shows the video of them, the YouTube video of him standing on water taking the chip shot, and then it goes back to it, and the tag is. Levitator 25, you seem to think your Jesus shot video was a glitch in the game. And then they show a video of the ball.
Yeah, this was
ball
EA, right? Who did this commercial response?
Yeah. And Tiger Woods walking out. Tiger Woods walking out, looking at the water. He takes his shoes off and and then puts his golf clothes on. Still standing on the edge of the water, just like right on the water. And all of a sudden he gets his foot wet. And then he steps down and starts walking out on top of the water.
Yeah.
it's a classic video.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, just like, yeah, it was awesome. So I didn't know if that was done using Twitch or not. That seems like that would be how it would be recorded, and then you'd clip it down. But
yeah, I don't know.
Which is why everyone thought that Google would buy them, because that's a perfect marriage of YouTube and Twitch right there, but was also why all the gamers were like, no, don't do it, because you'll ruin it.
Yeah.
And sounds like Amazon won't, for now.
Yeah, so I don't know, they've paid nearly $1 billion, and I actually think it makes sense for Amazon, because Amazon, you know, like we were saying, they've got the server back end to be able to do this sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
To handle it. It makes a lot of sense, and I think it also puts them into the place of, you know, they can't just open up a video sharing service and compete with YouTube. They almost, if they want to get into that space, they almost have to do it this way, which is buy a competing service designed for a specific niche and slowly evolve it into something that competes with Google. You know, basically do what Snapchat is doing against Facebook as opposed to what Google did against Facebook, you know, where you take a small niche and then you slowly evolve it into something that's bigger and more powerful. I still think that Snapchat's going to fail, but that's because of the nature of the company.
and not because of their strategy. And I think this will be, you know, as far as having user created content on their servers, this is the right direction for Amazon to go. You know.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. It'll be interesting in the sense that, like, we actually probably won't hear anything about it for like 5 years.
Yeah.
It'll just keep growing, kicking butt, taking names, that kind of thing. Just be one of those quiet successes.
Yeah. Yeah, which is, you know, that's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. I think it makes a lot of sense for Amazon and makes more sense than them releasing a Fire phone, that's for sure.
Yeah, which did you read the reports that everyone's pretty sure they've only sold like 35,000 of them?
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to talk about it this week, but there's just so much other stuff going on that it didn't even make it
mentioned.
Yeah.
Done. So, Google wasn't sitting around doing nothing. Watching others snap up valuable properties. They've been busy making their own potentially crazy wild program. And if you figured that out yet, we're talking about Google X. Turns out they have their own secret drone delivery program too.
You know, secret drone programs, it needs to be like, we're going to look back at this period of time and think it was just crazy. I'm telling you. Tell me about their secret drone delivery.
So,
are they delivering bombs too, like the United States?
Dude, they very much well could. But they don't want to call them drones. They want to call them... Where in the world is this? Why am I not... this is... Okay, I don't know why I thought Wired wrote this, but apparently it was The Atlantic. And it's the... Oh, they're calling them flying robots, I believe.
They're not flying. They're falling with style.
Yeah, yeah. They're not toys. Why can I not... Anyways, they're... this is long form, very long form.
Come like, on, Atlantic. Get your act together.
6-page article.
Oh.
And so, yeah. And so they don't just give you the information right up front. It's called Google Wing. That's what it is. It's part of Google X and let's see, I gotta write this down before I forget. So essentially this guy, the idea is it's this little thing. By little, it looks like it's like a meter or two wide. Which really isn't small.
What's a meter? Can we talk about feet? It's a yard.
It's a yard. It looks bigger than a yard, so I went with a meter, okay? Mm-hmm. But to be honest, I'm looking at a picture of it across the sky. So,
yeah.
Okay, here's one where I've got a picture of it on land. It looks like an RC airplane. About that size. So it's a cross between a helicopter and an airplane. And it reminds me, honestly, of how you could tell I've been watching like way too much of the Star Wars Clone Wars stuff, but Boba Fett's airplane, you know how the body actually like rotates for landing and takeoff?
Mm-hmm.
This works that same way. And mm-hmm. and so, because normally it's like, I think the U.S. has a fighter jet where it's the wings that rotate, right?
Yeah, what's it called? It's a Boeing plane, I think.
Maybe.
They're super cool looking. They got giant props.
Yeah.
And the
wings.
And they take off and they crash more regularly than any plane in our arsenal and semi-regularly kill a lot of people. So they don't get a lot of use. But they're very, very cool because they can take off and land in a single place. Whereas this one, yeah, it looks like it lands. It looks like it lands on its back. And then I've not actually seen them fly, which I keep looking for a video of the transition, how they.
So what is this? So I've got this video here.
It's them dropping the package.
Oh, lame. So I'll describe that for you. So what it'll do is it will then, you know, so it'll take off, and it looks like it's similar to how it actually looks when it'll take off vertically, like kind of like a rocket would. And then when it gets to its height, it'll rotate its body and fly, because that's efficient. And then when it gets to where it is, it'll rotate back, hover, drop the payload via, you know, like a line, and then set it down on the ground, zip it back up, rotate, fly off. And that's how it works. And they're, you know, they talk about how there's all sorts of sensors in there to get rid of false positives on whether or not the packages actually hit the ground or not. And they were saying that they even have an entire, setup. I'm thinking like call center type thing, but they're not for taking calls. They're for manually taking control of the wing vehicle.
Yeah.
And so they can then say, you know, it'll ping them and be like, I don't know what to do here. And so they can manually take over. And,
bring it out, man.
Yeah. Help me. And, you know, drop the package and then, you know, say, okay, now you're good. Continue on. Which they're like, that's exactly how they're doing it with the driving car stuff. And apparently that's exactly what they did with Google Maps, where, you know, if something didn't make sense, they had just an entire, I want to say like cadre of people. Is that an appropriate?
Cadre. Is that with a Q-U or a cadre?
I think it's C-U-A. Cadre.
Cadre.
Is that, are you looking it up right now? Is that what you're doing?
I'm helping you out. Define cadre.
Cadre.
C-A-D-R-E. A small group of people specially trained for a particular purpose or profession. A small cadre of scientists, and a C-A-D-R-E.
So I think I was using it right other than the small part. Whatever the big equivalent of that word is.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know, specifically trained to do a task.
Yeah.
And it's to, like, in, like for Google Maps, was to actually, like, fix the roads and make them correct. And if it was really complicated because they couldn't even figure it out from satellite imagery, they'd get someone over there to look at it.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, here's how it works. And so they're like, so, like, their philosophy, it's very interesting. Yeah.
Thank goodness they're close to San Francisco, because I'm sure they had to do that a lot.
Yeah. but their philosophy is, like, they don't necessarily, it doesn't have to be 100% autonomous. But, you know, if they can get 90% of it done and then they just use humans for the tricky parts, they're like, we're okay with that. That's okay.
Yeah.
Because once we learn that one thing, we can then program it in, and now we're at 91%.
It's effectively the United States government does the same thing with our drones, where it's like, you know, we do the drones do the easy part, getting the bomb right to the dude, and then the human being does the tricky part of, do I kill this person or not?
yeah.
Which
can't be tricky.
Depending on what part of the country you're in, or the world you're in, what country you're in, the answer is yes. Yes, we are going to kill you. Oh, that's dark.
So on that note, their purposes are not quite so sinister or dark. Instead, the whole program started out of a question kind of related to the sharing economy, is kind of where they ultimately landed. It was a, like, what if you didn't have to carry things with you? You know, it just, when you needed it, you just had to wait a couple minutes and it would be there. You know, it's like when Harry Potter would go, Accio Broom, and, you know, he'd avoid the dragon for a little bit. Man, I'm doing good with references. And then it would, you know, it'd come to him. I mean, that's literally like they're thinking like Harry Potter like that, except you use your smartphone instead of a wand. And so the idea being, you know, you don't have to carry your school books with you or
good, because I didn't while I was in college either anyway. So
yeah. Or I'm trying to think, you know, what else you would be carrying with you when you're like, oh, I don't need this right now, but I might need it later. A water bottle. Perfect, right? Things like that, where you could just be out on the town doing your fun thing and then be like, man, I'm really thirsty. I could use a drink right now. You little tap-tap on your phone. A couple minutes later, drone comes flying by, drops off the water bottle, and you take a swig. Somehow I don't know what you do now, but it's kind of like a basket or something. I don't know, but then it's, you know, then you're off, and so which I'm sure they're working on right now. They've got one way, and they'll figure out the other way eventually. But yeah, it was this idea of like, what would the world look like if we could share stuff, like maybe tools, and maybe you've got job sites where there's these drone things or you know, driverless flying vehicles, robots are flying back and forth, and so all of the construction sites, you know, you reduce the number of tools required like a quarter, and therefore reducing construction costs and things like that.
Yeah.
And because it takes just a couple minutes to fly things across the city, like, you could do that. And so that was their what-if game. They said that they've – which I'm like, that's a cool premise. And their whole thing was like when delivery – and that, you know, they were thinking about delivery stuff. You know, when you first had to do it by hand or, you know, by walking over, they're like, it took forever. And then Pony Express came out, and that changed everything. And then, you know, then the railway system.
The what?
You know, which then eventually it was like, you know, and so like they were like Pony Express. All of a sudden, got it to what, a week, maybe a couple weeks to go across the nation. And then UPS. What, no, not UPS. Sorry, the United States Postal Service was like, all right, a couple days, we can get it to you. And then it was UPS or FedEx or whoever came first. I think it was FedEx. I was like, we'll get it to you overnight. And which I still love the fact that he came up with that business plan and idea and submitted it to his business school, and his teacher gave him like a C because he didn't think it was a good business idea.
Yeah, well,
you know, take the C, I guess. That worked out.
That's like the dude who designed the 50th. The flag for the current 50 states, and he did it as a project during high school and got a C on it. And when it got ratified and actually became the flag that was used as the 50 states, his design that he submitted to the U.S. he went back to his teacher with the paper where he got a C and was like, look, I told you this was a good project. I want an A. It's like, he's like 50. And his teacher's like, fine. Here's an A.
what are the high school guys I say? They go, oh, bitter much?
Yeah, right.
Oh, hey, but you know what? I get it.
Oh, yeah. No.
I've got my own. I don't quite have that ending, but I've got my own. Actually, no. I do have that where that totally happened to me in high school where we were debating, like, gun policy in schools, or like how to get students to not kill each other or something. Yeah, I don't totally remember.
A noble goal.
Yeah. But it was a practice debates, and I came out with an idea, and I was like, you know what we should do? Let's bring dead bodies into the school and let's let people see what happens when you kill someone. And
I remember you talking about that.
Yeah, and I was like, this is a great idea, and
a little macabre, but effective.
Yeah, and my teacher was like, no, that's horrible. No, that's not a good idea, and, you know, did not give me a good grade. And then, it was like 2 months later, they were doing this whole drunk driving, like, thing. They tried to get students to stop drunk driving. So they literally brought in a huge car wreck and did a play. I don't know. That doesn't feel like the right word to say for it. A skit. That also doesn't feel right.
I would say a play seems a little more appropriate.
A drama. There you go. Of what happens the moment after the accident. You know, so we're all like on these bleachers. They're out on the field, and the cars are all wrangled and wrecked. And they use actual students from the school to do it. And so they had, you know, the police come and the fire department and the paramedics, and they're pulling out dead bodies and declaring people dead. And, you know, we're all watching it, and then we got to go back and talk about it. And I was like, wow, apparently I did have a good idea, huh? Take that. It didn't change my grade, but I felt good in my heart about it.
That's weird. This is kind of off topic, but they did that every couple of years because it's rather expensive, and they only do it at a few select schools, and they make a video of it and they show it. So we happened to be we went to the rich people's school, so they did it at our school semi regularly. We also had like horrible drug problems and alcohol problems, which I think is the other reason why they picked us. my senior year they did that as well, and like they do like the whole thing of the students who quote die during the drama, they do a big school-wide assembly at the end of the day where they do a funeral.
And oh my gosh,
is like the kid is in a casket. Yes! And they talk to you about all like the different like it's a mad Mothers Against Drunk Driving Association thing, and they you know they get really into like the whole like you know trying to you know talk to you about you know don't drink and drive blah blah blah, and like you know it's totally legit. That morning I walked into class and one of my friends sat down. This is before we know what's going to happen because they don't tell you ahead of time. And one of my friends goes, "Hey, I just want to let you know that one of our friends is." This girl that had been friends with us for throughout most of high school had a pretty severe case of type 1 diabetes and had passed away the night before. And then a Grim Reaper walked into our room, and for this whole like dramatization of like, and it, that was how they picked the like the students who were going to be part of the drama would early in the morning they'd have this person dressed as a Grim Reaper walk in and just grab random students, and as Wow. a senior they were grabbing seniors from my room, and it was just like it was one of those like I couldn't take it seriously all day because I was just like one of my friends just died, like actually just died. You guys are a bunch of pricks. I hate all of you. I was rather distraught because of the whole experience. I'm not sure I took away the same same emotions that were quite intended, but you know, hey, it's not perfect. I think it helped to keep a couple kids from getting killed, so that's good. But it's weird. it's an extreme tactic. It doesn't necessarily always work exactly as you would plan. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, and
how did we get
so
here?
That was a FedEx flag.
Google drones.
So I don't remember how those two connected, but something to do with FedEx. Oh yeah, I remember now. So the idea was, you know, FedEx took it to overnight deliveries, and their whole thing was like that changes everything. And then they said, what if we could get it to even faster? Like, you know, like Google is now experimenting with same-day delivery. Amazon's experimenting with same-day delivery. They're like, what if we could do another 10x improvement, which is the whole point of Google X, and get it to, like, within minutes? What would that change? And so that would kind of dovetailed with the, we could share stuff because it wouldn't take very long to get it. And so... yeah, pretty fascinating idea. They talked about some of the stuff that they tried. Like one of them, they're like, "Yeah, we tried to drop stuff via parachute, like Hunger Games style. Like it just doesn't work like it does in the movies, so we had to move on." But I'm kind of there's a part of it's like, dude, that's awesome that they're. Yeah, it just sounds like fun. I don't know. Let's shoot out of a cannon, which they said they tried that too. That didn't work, and you know, I'm just like, dude, that's sweet. I've got a crazy idea, and let's build it and see what happens. And yeah. Which just sounds cool. I guess apparently they borrowed this guy for 2 years. I can't remember the school. I feel like it's like MIT or something awesome like that, where he was into like drone. Yeah, it was MIT into drone type autonomous vehicle stuff. But it was interesting. They were saying that you know. He would not have been like the first on the list of like, oh yeah, they hired him for 2 years to run this program. And now his stint is done. He's going back to MIT and that was always part of the deal. And so there's a new guy taking over and that's part of the reason why they're like, okay, we're ready to talk about where we're at. Cause we hit a milestone in terms of people. And so, but they were saying that, you know, on first blush, like why did you pick him to help? And he was even like, why did you pick me? And it turns out that he worked with, what's that? It's like Thurn or something, who is the driverless vehicle, like head honcho. You know, he's done tons of stuff with remote systems, and he like worked with him for a while. Like, it's good to know good people.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. What's the
age old adage? It's not a what you know.
It's who you
know. Who you know.
It's true.
You know.
It's true. Apparently. So
network effect.
I gotta know better people. No, I know awesome people. I know.
Yeah.
I'm not complaining at all. But yeah, so they.
I'm gonna complain. I need to know better people.
Here, let me just let me yo Timbo Dean real quick.
Right. Yeah.
So Google is getting into the game. They're doing all this in Australia, by the way, not in the United States, because the United States hates this stuff, unless you're the government. And, you know, which is whatever. I think part of their hope is that they'll prove it, that it's... Wow, some cat's getting upset. They'll prove it in Australia, prove its value, show it works, and the United States will want nothing more than to bring it over because it's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know. I've
live
read
in California, so maybe not there, but Oregon be all over that.
Right. Well, I've read enough reports about how to easily and safely regulate drone armies flying over the entire cities all the time, and using a combination of public and private methods to regulate it in a way that would be effective, that there are effective ways to do it and safe ways to do it. Would it be super easy? No, but it doesn't have to be. It just has to be doable. And if there's a financial reason to do it, which I think there clearly is, we'll figure out how to get it done. What bothers me is that
Dude, I hope that Winco takes this up. Dude, that would be so sweet.
That would be cool. My problem is that there's the problem that we're running into is that the government is saying no, you can't do that, because it gives them a distinct tactical advantage. And for a very long, for the last 10 years, it's been something that only the government could afford to do. And, as things get smaller and it gets cheaper, it's becoming something that we can do in the private sector. And I don't know. I think it's unreasonable, the limitations that are being put on it right now on this entire field. And I don't think it's being done strictly for safety reasons.
I would agree.
And that makes me wonder if, even if they prove it out in a different country, how long will it take to show up over here? And I think the answer is a long time. But whatevs.
All right, Debbie Downer.
Yeah, sorry. I'm optimistic. I just think we'll have driving cars before we have drones, even though I think drones are obviously demonstrably easier than driving cars, because the Army has an army of drones and yet no automated cars. So, whatever. Doesn't matter.
That's a good point, actually.
Yeah.
Let me use proof.
Moving to things that are really cool. Obviously, I think coming up here in the next couple of weeks, there's gonna be some announcements.
Just one, right? What is it happening? What's the day? 9th? What is that? A Thursday?
It's a week from tomorrow. It's 8 days from now. Yeah. Okay. So,
man, I'm so pumped! Oh, I'm excited.
Right? I know.
Man, I'm such a fanboy. I try to hide it. Nope.
Yeah.
Not next week.
Yeah, me.
Oh, we're going to have to do a whole podcast the day before. Or the 2 days
two
before.
2 days before. That's all right.
Man,
we'll have piles of rumors to talk about. We'll do our annual pre-iPhone prediction show where I say it's going to be the coolest thing that's ever happened. It's going to be the salvation of the world, and you're going to say maybe we should temper our expectations and just expect the bare minimum, and then you'll turn out to be right, and I'll hate Apple for
it works.
5 minutes.
By the way, I totally had a thought like 2 months ago too. I was like, man. I don't do this, and so I didn't, but I was like, I should just buy 100 shares of Apple right now. And I don't have the money to do that, but, that was my thought. And because at the time it was trading like $80 a share, or $88 or something like that. And I just had that thought because I was like, dude, the fever pitch is going to hit high. And then I was like, and then Monday afternoon or morning or whatever it is, about sell them all.
Yeah.
Sell it off. Don't worry about it. And then buy the rest of them Wednesday morning at a discount.
No, it's true.
Because you just, the stock price is just slowly but surely gone up. And I'm like, oh, dude, I'm calling it right now. Crash is coming that Tuesday afternoon, Wednesday morning.
Yeah,
especially buy them all back at a discount.
Especially with all the rumors that are going on, because there's no way they're going to release two phones in a launch. There's no way. It's just not going to happen. And
with NFC, by the way. Wait, we're getting the show ahead of ourselves. Come on.
Yeah. Sorry. Okay. Sorry. So speaking of NFC, so we here at the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast have long believed that Apple doesn't need NFC because they have Bluetooth LE. And one of the fundamental, underpinning tenants. Yeah.
Is that, I don't know what you're going to say, but that seems like the word.
Yeah, that was the word I was looking for. What did I say?
I don't know. You hadn't yet. I cut you off.
Oh, yeah. One of the fundamental tenets of our show is that they don't need NFC. Apple doesn't need NFC because they have Bluetooth LE and it works effectively the same, but with a bigger range. And so, But one of the underpinning technologies that's required is the iBeacon system. It's this idea that you have these little Bluetooth things that aren't iPhones, but they send out a constant signal that the iPhone picks up, and the iPhone when it sees it will connect to it, and then they can start passing information back and forth, like location data, and sales data, and advertising data, and locally informative data, but most importantly, they could also connect you to some sort of a payment system, theoretically. And so the idea is that you don't need a NFC chip in order to prove the iPhone is present. You need an iBeacon. One of the dilemmas that as the iBeacons have been launched, though, is that, you know, they have a Bluetooth LE chip on board, and that requires a bit of electricity to run. And so they're selling these devices that have like super long battery lives, like year long battery life or couple month battery life, depending on what model you get and who's making it. But they still have the dilemma of, you know, occasionally you gotta recharge the batteries, which is not something that everybody loves. So this company,
yeah, believe me, I've got enough residents who don't change the batteries on their fire alarms and just unplug them and don't use them instead of letting me know.
Yeah,
it's a thing.
It's yeah. So this company called Affinity, not Infinity, because I'm assuming that if it was spelled correctly.
I think it's correctly pronounced Ifinity.
Affinity?
Ifinity.
Not Affinity. Affinity. Affinity.
Ifinity. Like iPhone.
Ifinity. Yeah, Ifinity. I get you.
And they just didn't do the lowercase I because they really would have gotten in trouble.
Yeah, the camel caps. So Ifinity, they're a Polish startup. They came up with a clever idea, which was to say, hey, you know, there's all these radio waves in the world that are that passing electricity or passing energetic magnetic waves, and we've got an antenna inside of our thing. Maybe if we use an antenna to pick up power, we could turn this into a everlasting iBeacon. And they did. And so it's it's pretty cool. So they developed a batteryless beacon tech that uses ambient electromagnetic waves. It's called Air Beacon, and it's currently in the testing phase. It's really cool. I get excited about this sort of thing because it's, you know, it's number one, it's wireless charging technology is effectively what it is. And it's something that I'm a big believer in. I think it's gonna, you know, this is the direction that, you know, we're gonna go for a lot of this power stuff is just sort of picking up ambient electricity, and that's exactly what they're doing here. But it gives you this, you know, it's basically gonna lead to these like embedded, you know, sensors everywhere that just sort of get put in and are there as part of your infrastructure, and then you can, you know, you can do with them what you need at that point. I don't know. I get really excited about this sort of stuff. And I think, you know, obviously, you know, the whole rumor mongering about NFC is important, but I'm a big believer that the iBeacon protocol is a way more important, technology for the future of Apple and for the future of most mobile devices, you know?
Yeah, that's cool. I keep trying to think of like how I could use it personally.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
I don't have an answer.
I don't either. I thought...
But I want an answer.
Yeah, right? I thought at one point, you know, maybe I could have it be like, you know, locally connected to my home or my room or something, yeah. So that I get like a notification when I walk in my room. And
well, you know, unlock the door, turn on the lights, you know, start the heater.
Yeah, that would be cool. But you know,
you leave it as the same thing.
The thing is, you get the Wi-Fi in your house that, you know, that acts basically the same way as soon as you pick up the Wi-Fi or the geolocation stuff, you know. And it's like I never turn on my lights or turn on or off my lights anymore, except when I go to bed. And it's funny. It's funny. I'll be totally honest with you, James. It's actually gotten annoying to turn my lights off. I'm laying in bed and can turn my lights off, and yet it still drives me crazy because I never have to turn my lights on or off anymore, because they turn on when I wake up. They turn on to wake me up. They turn off automatically when I leave. They turn on automatically when I come back. And so now the fact that there is this like unclear time of when I go to bed, and it's making me think, man, there's got to be a way for it to automatically, without any effort, have my phone realize I'm going to bed. I really can't wait for the Siri, let's close down the house and have it automatically turn down, because I feel like that's not too bad. But having to go and find the app to turn it off drives me crazy. It's on my main page. I mean, it's right there, but it's like the one time that I have to go in and manually turn off the lights. It's terrible.
How could you do that? I feel like that's an if this then that situation.
Yeah, it still requires me to actively let some computer know that I'm going to bed.
I feel like problem. You being a mechanical engineer could have the ability with using an Arduino or something or other to create a pressure sensor.
Oh yeah. No. I could do it, but I'd still have to press a button. I could do a clapper. That technically wouldn't require me to press a button. I mean, I think effectively it's still me pressing a button, and why I would be so much more willing to clap loudly as opposed to open up my phone and hit an app. It takes 3 taps, but I can see where you're going. I don't know.
Better yet, just create a microphone that connects to Siri and other stuff, and that way you just, you know, do Star Trek style, you know, just shout out commands. Siri,
yeah,
turn off my lights.
Please. Yeah, I don't know.
I beacons are cool, man. I want to use them for something. I don't know what. That might be an issue, but it sounds like enough people are working on it that will stop being an issue eventually.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and I think you'll just, you know, yeah. There's something there, and it'll be interesting to see. I think eventually we'll get to the point where, like you said, somebody will figure out how to use it on a not just big retailers using it, but you'll figure out some good reason to use it in your home, and all of a sudden things will start really taking off, you know?
Yeah.
But it's cool. What was I going to talk about next? I don't remember.
The CGI one, I don't know what that is.
So you've obviously not heard of Zinc. It's a CGI rendering tool for the cloud is how they describe it. So while Google was off buying, or Amazon was off buying Twitch, Google bought Zinc. And so the deal with Zinc is, so, you know, movies today are, you know, there's a lot of CGI, computer generated imagery, right?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Right, it's all real. Superman actually flies.
Yeah.
And so basically, what happens is you know, you for the longest time, what would happen is a company like Industrial Light and Magic would write these programs that allowed them to build, you know, 3D computer generated effects, and then they would buy a bunch of servers their own, and they'd build their own server farm to render the actual final image. And this was something that Industrial Light and Magic was doing. This was something that companies like Pixar were doing, and all the different movie studios had their own server farms for whatever technologies that they were building, right? Yeah, and to quickly build and animate these things. Well, it's one of those things where, you know, as time goes on, companies like, you know, we've this just kind of like story in the backdrop that's been going on over the past couple of months. It's becoming a bigger and bigger idea that of there we've hit this tipping point where it is now way cheaper to do storage, to do processing, to use the leverage of larger servers farms than do it yourself. For a long time, it was always viewed of you'd have your own, like big companies like Genentech would have their own server cloud. They do everything in house, and then because it was cheaper to do it in house, because they had the capital expense to pay for it, and so the operating expense over time, the ROI would be less. Well, now you've crossed this threshold that they used Bezos laws, they call it, and I think unsurprisingly, Bezos is sort of the one driving us in this direction, as the law is named after him. But it's this idea of, you know, it becomes cheaper to do things in the cloud, and so Google, realizing that, hey, this is awesome, they bought Zinc, which is a software platform for doing these rendering these effects. And it's kind of a big deal. The technology was used to render effects in movies like Star Trek, Into the Darkness, and Looper, for example. So, you know, big name, you know, Hollywood movies. Looper, not so much. Star Trek, Into the Darkness, definitely. But, you know, it's basically, you get these companies, and locally they'll design these 3D, you know, things, and they'll do the animations, and they'll put the textures in and everything, and then you send it to Google, and it'll crank out the final stuff for you, and you uploading, nice, you know, high resolution stuff. Yeah, it's cool, and they, you know, and since these are time consuming, you know, processes, it's something that Google is definitely, you know, good for. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting to see us moving in this, you know, this direction. And I think it's something that you'll see more and more and more of until HP launches their new cool server architecture. But I think that's the only, yeah. Well, and I think the thing is it's like that could legitimately disrupt it if it's something that it, you know, it if it lowers the cost of, you know, if it does effectively what, you know, right, because right now it's the capital expense to get this sort of server equipment in line is so high, you know, that to get competitive, to lower the operating expense, blah, 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 you know, that equation, it's Google and Amazon have hit the scale that they require to do it effectively. Whereas, you know, if HP can change that math, it might send things back in the other direction. You know, but I think the reality of it is this direction that everything's going, nobody's going to do anything locally, and Google was right all along. But yeah, it's cool to see, and as somebody who's like a fan of, you know, movies and special effects and stuff, mm-hmm. You know, I like following this technology. I remember watching back in the day on like Discovery Channel when they would do the documentaries on how special effects are done in movies and stuff. And man, those are some of my favorite documentaries on Discovery Channel. It was the best. And so, this is cool. This is just really cool. To see Google moving in this direction. And our movies will be made by Google from now on. They really are becoming, like, scary.
Big Four, man. They're taking over everything.
Yeah. 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 Who's your Big Four?
Google, Amazon, Apple, Facebook.
Oh, man. That's... It's funny because I thought... I went through it and I said, man, he either bumped Facebook or Microsoft. On either one, that's going to be rough to be in that position. You know, I think it'd be easier if I think Facebook would be frustrated but understanding, and the fact that Microsoft is definitely the one that got bumped, I think, is a bit more of a shot across the bow.
What have they done recently? They're pulling in.
They hired a new CEO. That's what they did recently.
Oh yeah.
And he's a web services guy, James. He's all about the cloud.
Yeah.
This is his bread and butter.
Well, you know. Well, I think our point is that it's not all about the cloud. It's going beyond that. It's saying, yeah, that's definitely a critical component, but that is a leverage point for other bigger projects. And so, you know, and I think that's what fundamentally makes the difference for that, and that's one of the reasons why HP isn't on that list. So, yeah, we do hardware, you know, and
yeah,
and they're getting into the software. They're like, we would like to be the devices that that stuff runs off of, you know, whether it's a server or a laptop or a printer, but you know, they're not controlling, I would say, like information and processes and attention.
Yeah, it's true. And it's funny because, I mean, it's funny that you say that because Microsoft, in this article, they say Microsoft has occasionally brought up its cloud suitability for this kind of work, but it's never been used for it, you know, which I think is telling.
Or at least not for anything worth mentioning.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah, I just, I don't know. Yeah, that's why they're not on that list. You know, whereas, like, with Facebook, it's clearly there. I don't want to say it. You know, they're trying to get into the 3D thing. They got a social component. There's just a lot there. But, yeah.
Yeah. I agree. Did you try out the...
Yes.
Speaking of the Big Four, and the one that didn't get knocked out of the arena, they came out with a new app. Did you get to try it? Chance to try it out. You already said yes. So what do you think?
I think it's cool. I have a couple thoughts on it. It very much feels like an experiment on their part. I mean, I think they're touting out the whole like bare bones, do minimalism, whatever, you know, minimum viable product. It definitely counts for that.
Yep.
But I also think it's in the sense that like they have this great technology and they felt the need to get it out there and they'll worry about building features later. Maybe. So from like what it does, from what I understand how it works, impressive. You know, I look at the final results and I'm not an expert enough to know that, oh wow, that really is better. So I don't have that. I wish the app did more. Like, honestly, I can't tell if I turn the phone, and I should just try it, I guess. If I turn the phone, does it switch to landscape mode or not? I can't tell.
That's a good question.
I know. And ultimately, if you're throwing it in Instagram, it crops it anyways. Who cares? But and I no sound. That's weird. Maybe it's not the type of video, I guess. So
well, it's because it's, you know, literally every time I hit it, it says there isn't much light here. Find a brighter spot and your hyperlapse will look better. Try again to start recording.
Yeah.
I've not taken a film yet where it didn't warn me about the light situation.
That's sad.
Yeah, I guess.
So I did a video actually. Like a real one. I wasn't just playing with it. We were helping some friends move and everyone had to walk down a path, and so I stood there and I recorded for a little while and caught everyone coming over like ants. Kind of fun, and you know, and playing with the whole speed change was kind of fun to go back and forth and be like, all right, what's the right cadence here for people walking?
Yeah.
You get enough detail, but you don't get bored. And so I thought that was cool. It's like I said, I think I'm more, which is why they did a separate post, like intellectually intrigued by the technology behind it.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to, like, if they didn't do that, I would have been like, okay, another video app, big deal. You know? But because they explained it and they were like, well, you see, it used to cost, like, this $15,000 camera to get the stabilization, and it had a separate caddy from, or separate cable or harness or whatever from the operator so that you could do these time-lapse videos and you could move and it would all be smooth. And their insight was to say, you know, these devices have gyroscopes in them. Let's use the gyroscope to figure out how the camera's moving, and then we'll just adjust the video. And what they do is they actually crop the video down ever, you know, a little bit. And so the raw video is actually larger in terms of format. And so what that allows them to do is then move the video, you know, the focus area up and down to make it smooth. And they can do that almost on the fly. It's not exactly real time, but I mean, it's as close as you can get without it being real time, right? You go finish, and it goes calculating, okay, done. And You know, and so to have that insight that you can actually track what the phone is doing and do some math to figure it out to help smooth out this time lapse, you know, you go, oh, that's pretty cool. I think they said a little too much. Obviously, that's not going to happen in 8 days, but I think in 372 days it will. Natively in the device.
Right.
You know, it was one of those... Which is maybe that's why they came out with a standalone, and actually have a different way of calling it, a standalone app, and they're not baking it in because they were like, yeah, this is cool. We realize that we're not going to, you know, we're not going to hold the patent on the way that this is done, but we want to be the first ones out there and get the notoriety for it.
And you know what's really interesting about this is the timing of it. And I have long argued on this show that Microsoft is a really good engineering technology company. They just stink at everything else involved in trying to make an effective long-term business model. They've got some really smart people working there, and the reason why I mention this is because there was a Gizmodo article on the 10th of August, so just like 2-3 weeks ago, where Microsoft talked about a research project they were working on. And it's a project that makes shaky time-lapse video watchable, is what this thing is, which if you've been listening for the last 2 or 3 minutes, you'd realize it sounds similar. But they were announcing this like 3 weeks beforehand. And what's really crazy about it is when you watch the video, they'll show you the input video and it's all crazy shaky and everything. And then they have the sped up time-lapse video. And because the whole idea was like you'd do a time-lapse of somebody like, they'd be on a mountain bike and they'd have the camera on their head, and so it'd be really shaky and it'd be hard to watch in time lapse, and you wouldn't really get a sense of what was going on because things are moving so fast, you know, and there's so little detail. And so what they would actually do is they went so far as to use those images, do a bunch of rendering to build these like 3D paths, and then only grab images that are on the right, you know, are looking at the right place, and then do further stabilization and centering stuff and making composite images. I mean, it's really impressive rendering that they're doing, and they create these beautiful time-lapse videos that were just unbelievably, you know, way beyond what Instagram is able to do. Because Instagram, it's all like, it'll stabilize things within a small frame. And if there's a lot, if you're shaking it a lot, there's nothing they can do about it. Whereas Microsoft's can do stuff about that. I mean, it's really impressive. But the great part about it is they have text talking, you know, labeling when you have input video versus their stabilized video. And guess what they call their stabilized video? Hyperlapse.
Nice.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I'm not sure if that's actually a known term. Now that I'm thinking about it,
I think
out loud,
it might be.
I think it is. You know, it's just one of those things. But it's like you sit there and you go, I think the reason why Facebook decided to not patent this technology is because they're pretty sure they can't. But what I think is really interesting about it is you got Microsoft once again doing what it normally does, doing some really great computer science, future thinking research, and then other companies actually pushing out a product and getting people to use it. And you know, one of the themes of Silicon Valley, the TV show, is that, you know, just because you have the best product doesn't mean you're going to win. There are a lot of times a worse product wins simply because it's first to market. And, you know, I think this is going to be one of those cases where it's like Microsoft didn't put out an app that allowed you to use this technology. Microsoft put out a video showing their research, and it's a better product. It's better technology. And Facebook's going to get all of the, you know, anything that's worth anything, because it was, you know, Instagram pumped out an app in a couple of weeks once they figured out how to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's an interesting, and I have a feeling that that's why they did the standalone app as opposed to baking it into Instagram. It's because they felt like it wasn't stable enough, it wasn't good enough for Instagram yet, but they didn't want somebody else to run away with this. You know, they wanted to be the first to market. Be the first to market with a minimally viable app, and then, you know, iterate, improve until you can get it, quote, acquired by a bigger app, even if it's internally acquired by moving the technology into Instagram at some point. as a, you know, as a, as an actual feature. But I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah, it is. And I, that was one of the other comments that I've heard about it too, was, you know, it's not this, it's not necessarily an unbundling. It's more of this layering on top of existing apps, which is an interesting component all on their, on their own, you know. And so, sure, there was that component of, man, well, let's get this out of here fast, but also this idea of, no, it's a secondary app. You don't need it. If we baked it in, people may not have used it. It wouldn't have gotten the notoriety. But because it's now separate, now, granted, you can only share to Facebook and Instagram, and it does save it to your timeline, so, or your photo album, camera roll, whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it's saved there, but yeah.
And there's definitely a history of this sort of thing with Instagram, with the idea of, like,
now you can put it onto, what's it called? Vine. Now you can import video.
Oh, yeah. It's true. But one of the, it's, there is a history of this sort of thing with Instagram, where it's like the frame boxes where you'd have multiple pictures and stuff, where people would go through and make specialized images that they would then upgrade, upload to, yeah, using other apps, third party apps, to, and then upload it to Instagram. So it's,
that's what I do.
You know, the culture, yeah, right. The culture of Instagram is such that that's, you know, expected, as a technology. People don't expect everything to be baked into Instagram. It's the portal to posting, not, ooh, not the,
can we,
thank
can
you. I just made that. Yes, please. Let's do it. The portal to posting. You know, so I don't know. It's, yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. It's definitely interesting watching these different companies, you know, move forward to this kind of technology.
Mm, yeah. Still not saving the world, but it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool. So, there is technology that is saving the world, in my opinion.
Yes,
Square,
what is
Cash.
It?
Square Cash.
Oh, man.
Square Cash.
Not necessarily what I was expecting, but I like it.
Yeah, no, it totally is. So they came out with Square Cash 2.0. The first one, it was an app. It was pretty funny. You would type in an amount and say, like, send money, and then it would kick you over to the email app, and you would type in the person's email and send them an email, and then it would take you back to the app. And that was Square Cash. You obviously didn't need the app. You could just send an email.
Right.
The way that it worked was, like, crazy simple. You'd have your person in a two address, and then you'd also do, like, I think it was just cash@square.com. Put the amount in the subject, and then if you wanted to add a note for what it was for, you'd put that into the body of the email. Send, done. They'd get an email saying, hey, you got a request to, or here's money. Click this button to get it, and then you know. And if you hadn't, if you hadn't signed up yet, you'd get an email saying sign up to actually send the money, and you'd enter your debit card, and everything would happen. It'd be great, free, by the way, which is a pretty darn good price, if I'm gonna say so myself.
You know, as far as prices go, I'd rather you pay me, but free is the next best option.
Yeah, it's not bad. So now it's better. So now you can send cash by texting as well. And, yeah, which is kind of crazy. So you could be sitting there. You don't have to do the whole email thing. The email is also now built within the app. And so the other thing they do is now you can import your address book. You can add a picture to your account so they know who you are, just to be sure. And, you know, obviously they're, it knows if you have the email and the phone number, oh, this is the same person. So, it's pretty neat. You know, great uses for it are splitting checks for, what the heck is a vacation tab? I don't know. Group gift purchases. And it's still all free. And it's pretty quick and easy to do. The interesting thing, though, is that they estimate that Square is losing about 25 cents per transaction.
Whoa.
Yeah, so they're actually losing money, which makes kind of sense to me because Dwolla charges 25 cents per transaction for anything over 10 bucks. And so that would seem to make sense to me that, of course, I'd like to think Dwolla is actually making money, so maybe they're not making a lot. I don't know.
Yeah.
But one of the things I still love about Square is that it happens so fast. You get your money within, like, a couple days, as opposed to normally it could take, like, up to 7 to do it, because it's got to takes 3 days to transfer into the third party system, and then 3 days to transfer into your account. So, you know, plus a day of wiggle room in there. Yeah, the other cool thing about it is that if you invite someone to try it out, they give each of you a dollar.
Really?
Yeah.
So they are paying me to do it. That's perfect. Well, I'm in.
Yeah, yeah. So you can answer no and or not give any information, but have you had an opportunity, say, I don't know, this week to try it?
Not really. I am not at that point. I will soon, hopefully, but yeah. I know what you're driving at. I sold something on eBay, and yeah, we're still figuring it out. But I'll give a full appraisal of it probably next week.
Sounds good. So yeah, cool app. Check it out.
Cool. All right. Sounds good. I will check it out. I like it. I'm excited.
Yeah, dude. Go split some tabs.
I know. That's the real advantage there, is that you get to, you know, you can... somebody pays for it, and you can just, when I was out with some friends last night, it was craziness trying to get the bill split between five of us, so everything could, you know, when it was like a $214 bill.
We'll do the math for you. You got to do the math somewhere.
Well, but that's, we ended up having to have our waitress do it. And, that's not, if it's a busy night, you know, they'll hate you for that. But it was a $214 bill, so it wasn't like you could just have one of us pay. There was a lot of us.
Okay, good.
You know, and so, it wasn't like just one of us could just be like the cool kid and, you know, pay for everybody and feel good about it at the end of the night. No, it's a little beyond the pale. So if one of you could, you know, one of you got $200 in the bank account, you slide your card, make it easy on the bank, and then all of you just hit them up with that sort of thing, you know, that's awesome. And I think that's the way it's going. Now, if it could just all be, like, you know, connected through iBeacons, that would be perfect. But, you know. So, Intel made an announcement today. Or not today.
Wednesday.
This week. Wednesday. And it's kind of a cool announcement. Okay, I'm going to have to move fast.
Why?
Because I have three... When do we start? How long do we have?
We got 20 minutes.
Okay, well, perfect. I won't move that fast then. I'll move it at a snail's pace.
You know, whatever, you know.
Okay, cool. So Intel made an announcement. And basically what it is it's a tiny little chip that is a 3G modem. And so what is a 3G modem? Well, it's a Wi-Fi. It's basically a cellular antenna that connects to 3G. Thing is, though, they show a picture of it if you go to the website, and it's like small as a penny. I mean, the thing is tiny, and if you pick up a penny and you think, wow, man, that's really small, that is not very big. It's actually
good luck.
Yeah. Exactly,
all day long.
Exactly. And it says Intel clearly isn't happy with the state of affairs, as it's just unveiled an extra tiny, we're talking about, you know, larger form cellular stuff, an extra tiny modem that you put truly sleek, always connected devices on your body and seemingly everywhere else. The new XMMM6255, which is probably the lamest name, isn't much larger than a penny, but delivers a full-fledged 3G data link. It's built to take abuse like power spikes, and it doesn't need a big antenna to get a good connection. It can even get a solid performance in a low signal area like your basement. So yeah, this is cool. It's like a low power, high effectiveness 3G antenna. And it's a nice little thing. And I was reading about this and I was thinking, you know, so far the talk about smartwatches has always been, there's like two categories. There's the Bluetooth phone extension. It doesn't have a cellular connection. It's just designed to do, you know, to be connected via Bluetooth to your phone. And then if you need data or anything pushed to it, you do it all over Bluetooth. And it's Bluetooth is a strong enough, especially Bluetooth LE is a fast enough data connection where you can get pretty good bandwidth, you know. So if you wanted to actually do higher data usage things, you can, but everybody kind of thinks of it as notifications, which is effectively what your Pebble is, right?
Right.
It's a Bluetooth attachment. It can do a few things on its own, like keeping track of the time. But there's not much you can do from a smartwatch perspective without being connected to a phone at some point. And then there's the other type of device, which is what I wear, which is my Fitbit, which is more of a Bluetooth-enabled tracker. And likewise, it requires a phone to be able to do any real heavy lifting. But its big value proposition is that it's tracking. It's got data sensors in it that keeps track of what I'm doing, how many steps I'm taking, and telling me I'm getting fat again. And then because I'm not taking enough. Those are like your Bluetooth connected devices. That's one category. And then the other category would be your fully cellular devices. And these are always super ugly and just don't really work, as they require a large screen to do anything effectively. They're constantly connected to, they draw power like crazy. And they're basically a phone strapped to your wrist. And so they're usually overly large and not really the greatest solution. So Intel's trying to come up with something a little bit better. And then this is what this tiny 3G modem is. Hmm. One thing to notice here is it's 3G. So it's a slow data connection. You're not going to be streaming movies.
I love how we think that's all slow. But anyways. Right.
Yeah. It's been 2 years, James. It's slow. you're not going to be streaming YouTube movies. You're not going to be uploading things really quick. It's a relatively small pipe compared to what your phone has. What's wrong? You seem...
No, keep going.
Yeah. And so as I was sitting there, I thought about this like compelling device. What would be awesome to me is when we think about like our Bluetooth enabled devices, we think about small little data connections, little push notifications, things like that. And the ability to, look at my watch as opposed to pull on my phone. And everybody always asks, why would I do that? And I've made the argument with the Fitbit that the reason why I like having the Fitbit is because I can leave my phone places and it keeps tracking me. My phone will be a pedometer if I want it to be. I can start an app and I'll have a pedometer on me. The reason why I have the Fitbit is so that I can leave my phone somewhere. And I think that's a really compelling argument for the smartwatch, is the idea that you don't always have to have your phone with you, and it allows you to continue to do stuff. But getting data to it is a dilemma. And so this is a solution. And this is what I was thinking. Okay. To me, this is a compelling thought for a watch. This little tiny 3G modem should fit inside of a wrist watch. And what if it was used in a similar manner to what Kindle does with its Whisper Sync, which is it's a small amount of data. Basically, it's just taking what book are you reading and what page did you leave off on. It's constantly connected to a 3G antenna. And now my Kindle, which is a Wi-Fi only, will do that same thing, but it will do it over Wi-Fi, and so only when you're connected to Wi-Fi, which seems to work pretty well for me because I don't really read on anything but my Kindle. I don't really need to sync it very often. And so I sit there and I go, that works. But what's cool about the Whisper Sync is that the device, part of what you're paying for when you buy the 3G antenna, is a lifetime service guarantee. It's over the lifetime of this device, the antenna will still get connected to whoever is doing the service.
Yep.
And so this is what my thought was. A big company cuts a deal with AT&T or Verizon or T-Mobile or whoever. Somebody with a big, probably AT&T or Verizon. You cut a deal. Basically what you say is the device is always going to be connected. You get a certain amount of bandwidth throughput, and it's all going to be over 3G. So it's not the top-of-the-line stuff. You're not going to be taxing the newest end of the network. You're going to be taxing the lower end that's already fully built out. And it does it, so it's only doing it with really light bandwidth items like push notifications. And then all of a sudden, this thing is basically it acts as a peripheral. It's locked down. It doesn't have a bunch of apps that you can push to it, but it's always connected. And so it breaks it out as from being a peripheral. And I'm thinking of how do you get, because one of the big arguments is that people will go out and buy these watches and put them in a, or these devices and put them in a drawer. How do you get people to get to the point where they keep them with them all the time? And I think that this is a really cool idea. This idea that you're not going to get much more than a yo or a simple push notification. You want more information, you got to bust out your, you got to bust out your phone. But the idea that I could walk away from my phone and still get notifications, so I could know if I got a text message, even though I can't respond to it necessarily, I can look at it, read it, and then walk back to get my phone if I want to respond to it.
I could just stay up to it. You know, you put a mic in it, build in Siri or whatever,
yeah,
to do the text translation, and that's your only input option, and you can reply.
But I would say even if that wasn't the case, though, even if
25,
yeah, but even if that's, you know, even if that wasn't the case, where you couldn't do that, if there wasn't really an input method outside of the data for like health tracker stuff that's being pushed to whatever service as well. I don't know. I think you've actually got here the beginnings of something compelling. And I think that if there's a service charge that goes with it, you're not going to be a winner. I think you need to be able to kind of package it all together as Amazon did, where it's just part of the cost of it. And if you could, you know, and if it were a small enough bandwidth thing where it's, you know, where it's something that you could cut a really good mass deal with AT&T or Verizon, you know, it's funny. I was thinking about, like, how could you guarantee something like that forever? And then remember that nobody holds on to this sort of stuff for more than 3 years. You know,
yeah,
you know, these things go away. It's not a big deal. But, you know, and then the only dilemma that you have is power. And so if you had some sort of a cool looking stand that you just, like, you take the watch off and you set it on a stand at night, and it charges it every night, you know, and so it's just sort of an idea that the watch will last for 28 hours, right? So you only have to charge it once a day. I don't know. I think it's, and actually you wouldn't even have to do 28 hours because theoretically you sleep for 8 of those. So if it lasted 20 hours and you only have to, you know, charge it once a day, I think you could actually sell something that would be a really, really, really compelling device. But the thing is that Android Wear wouldn't work with it because Android Wear is data intensive, or at least you would say in order to do the really data intensive stuff, you need to have a, you know, Bluetooth and connected phone, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know. I like it. I'm excited about it. I'm excited to see where it goes. And, you know, it's cool when Intel comes out with this sort of thing. Here's this tiny little part of me that's hoping that when, you know, they, because Recode announced, they leaked that the iPhone or the iWatch is going to be announced on September 9th. And then the next day they announced that, but it won't be launched till the beginning to the new year. And so everybody's like, you know, in a tizzy because Apple's gonna announce their new device, which actually makes sense if it requires any FDA or not FDA
FCC.
FCC approval. That takes a long time and it's public knowledge, obviously. So it's, you know, that's why they announced the original iPhone 6 months before it launched, because of that.
Well, that plus you can get developers doing stuff and.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there's a number of reasons to announce your maiden project months before the launch, even though that's not normally Apple style. But yeah, so I think you sit here and you go, you know, this is the sort of thing that I wonder, oh man, maybe Intel finally got permission to announce that they've built these cool little chips for Apple. It's probably not the case. I'm probably getting ahead of myself. That's next year's iWatch.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's moving in a direction where I guess what my point in this is, I think this is clearly where we're going to go. That's where, in order to make this work, this is what has to happen as a device. And it's cool that Intel and the big companies are working on devices specifically for this sort of thing, you know. And I think, you know, it may not be this year. It may be a couple of years. It may be, you know, it may take a while for people to really put together that really compelling package. But the different pieces of the puzzle are assembling themselves so that somebody can run away with it.
Yeah. And
will that be Samsung? Probably not. Will that be, you know, Motorola or, you know, or Google or Apple? I don't know. But, you know, I think the pieces of the puzzle are there. So that's cool. And then speaking of terrible hardware decisions, I
old is the new new.
Yeah, right. So do you remember what happened to Sega? Basically the dilemma.
No.
They came out with, like, so Sega was this powerhouse company going toe-to-toe with Nintendo and arguably beating them. And then all of a sudden they just, like, evaporated into nothingness and PlayStation took over. And I was young enough at the time that I wasn't aware of what was going on outside of knowing that Sega wasn't cool anymore and I wanted my Nintendo 64. But basically what happened in retrospect to the whole Sega deal was they came out with new pieces of hardware too rapidly. They didn't stick with the platform long enough in order for people to really get invested in it and allow other developers to get behind it. And so no platform really, you know, they came out with the Sega, then the Sega Genesis, and the Sega Genesis 64, then the Sega Saturn, and the Sega Saturn upgrade, and then this, and then that. And then, you know, and there was like 7 different iterations of the system in as many years. And it never really gave developers or gamers a chance to catch up and to build on that platform, and it ultimately sunk the hardware division of the company, and they became a software company, and then eventually they sold off their valuable IP, and now Nintendo owns Sonic the Hedgehog. you know, is how that, you know, that went along, and I got to be honest, dude, I think Nintendo is about to do that to itself. It's about to Sega itself. They just announced what they're describing as the new Nintendo DS. They've got, or 3DS. It's literally the name. They're coming out with a Nintendo 3DS and a 3DS XL.
By the way, we have this commenter who, hi Mike, loves potatoes. What's up, Mike? He thinks that Sega's real problem was that they ignored the power of the potato. Just put it out there.
That is hard to argue with. I'm gonna, you know what? Brilliant. That's funny.
I'm ready for that one.
I wasn't. You got me. So basically, what happened is they're coming out. It's true. They're coming out with this new hardware, and there's a couple of new things that they're doing. Number one, it's got a new processor in them, so they're going to be able to do higher-end graphics, similar to what they're able to do on the Wii U, which is impressive. They're also got a couple of new buttons.
Not that the graphics are impressive. It's just that you can do higher stuff.
Well, that it's on par with Wii U in a handheld device.
Gotcha. Okay. Good.
It's sort of a.
What does that say about the Wii U?
That's actually what I was about to say. It's not really a compliment to the Wii U so much as it's a compliment to what they're doing with the 3DS. Yeah. But the problem, they're putting a higher resolution screen on it, which actually I think is a great idea, because what you can do from a programming perspective is you basically have a high and a low level graphics. So if you've got the new one, you plug the cartridge in, you got the new one, you get the better graphics. I've got the older system. I don't care as much about graphics. It'll click into it. It's got a gyroscope. It does facial tracking, and so they can actually adjust the 3D images to more accurately target it at your eyes. So the 3D image will stay 3D as opposed to going out of focus if you move the device too much, which is pretty impressive. It's from a technological perspective, it's a nice little device. They're putting an NFC reader in it so that it can connect with some of their like physical game things. I don't know, there's these games where you get these like little tokens and they allow you to play with different things. I don't really get it. It's kind of dumb to me, but whatever. But it's a compelling thing that a lot of people are using. They've put more shoulder buttons on it. So it used to be that you had just the L and R button. Now they got the ZR and ZL button. So it's a second set of shoulder buttons, which is pretty common in game controllers nowadays. to have four up on the shoulder. They added a little joystick up on top of the device, or on the main face of the device. So there's a second analog joystick, and it's a smaller thing. It's supposed to be more functionally like. Well, so they describe it as it's sort of like the C stick from the GameCube.
Oh.
Yeah.
So not useful.
Yeah, exactly. But the problem is this that I have. Okay, so number one, they're making no differentiation between, virtually no differentiation between the 3DS and the new 3DS. They've just added the word new, which I think is a real marketing problem. But I think what they've realized is that they wanted to build better hardware. They wanted to make some upgrades. But they also felt like they couldn't just they couldn't create a new whole new system because that would alienate people like me who just recently bought the 3DS when Pokemon came out, you know, in the last year. And they made a ton of sales in the last year, but they also want to upgrade the system. My dilemma here is that they added extra buttons. It's one thing to add better processing power, better screens and stuff, and allow you to change it over, you know, do that. But if you fundamentally can change the controller and the input mode on something like this, that means that there are going to be people who will make games that are specifically designed for the new system that I can't buy. They're going to alienate me and people
sound
like me.
They have a problem. You have to get the new console.
Yeah, well, you're right. That is exactly what the point is. And I would sit there and I'd say...
Either that or developers will act like the Kinect and go, or we'll develop it for the bigger market.
Which, yeah, it's one of those two things. Either this is completely dumb and nobody's going to go and buy anything new for it, or they're going to alienate people like me who just bought one, and I'm not going to buy another one. And the thing is there's a history of this. We've seen this before. Sega, you know, that's the reason why I brought up that story. Like, you know, if you iterate too quickly and people, you know, buy at the wrong point in the cycle, you know, the 3DS XL is a relatively new device compared to, you know, I realize the 3DS is getting a little bit long in the tooth. But that was the whole point of the 3DS XL, was to be the new hardware improvement upgrade.
Yeah.
And it's too short of a development cycle. So I don't know. I'm nervous for Nintendo.
Did you get the XL?
I did. Because I'm awesome.
I'm not surprised. I mean, yeah, I would too.
That's how I roll.
Did you get what color did you get?
I actually got it with a special Hyrule edition, so it's gold with
right.
a Triforce
right.
edition.
I
Triforce
that.
On it.
That's awesome. Man. Yeah.
It's very cool. I don't know. It's cool. I like it. I play it when I'm like on planes and stuff. I don't play it a ton, so maybe I'm the wrong demographic. But I have a feeling. You know, it's funny. I was talking. You know, we talked last week about the fact that I am an idiot and bought a PlayStation 4.
Yep.
And I said after the show that part of the what actually made me so nervous about it wasn't so much that I was spending the money on the system. I've got the money to spend. It's not, you know, it wasn't a bad financial decision. That wasn't what was disconcerting about it. It's not even a bad time decision because I don't play very many video games to begin with. So it's not like, you know, it's okay. But what really bothered me most about it is that it was the first non-Nintendo video game platform that I was going to buy. And, you know, and I've gotten to a point as a hardcore Nintendo fan that I'm not going to buy the Wii. And I sit here and I look at the 3DS and I just shrug my shoulders and I'm like, you know, you guys are moving in the wrong direction. Their hardware is becoming less and less compelling, you know? And other people are moving faster and are doing better. And I just, you know, and as, you know, as a lot of game critics would tell you, they're not coming out with any great new games. I have more and more friends that are telling me, you know, I'd rather sit down and play the original Wii or the original Super Smash or Smash Bros, you know, Melee or Brawl. I don't necessarily want to play the new. Their favorite isn't the most recent. Their favorite is an older one, you know, and on GameCube. That's bad news for Nintendo. I feel like a lot of people are getting that way, you know. The classic Zelda that everybody thinks nostalgically back to and wants to play is Ocarina of Time, not, you know,
that is a good game.
Yeah, right. And I don't know. I think I hate to be this way, James, but Nintendo's got a real problem. They got a real problem, and I think it's more systemic than they're not building hardware that's powerful enough. I think it's, you know, they're just they've they're running out of momentum.
Yeah.
And when people like me start to jump ship, and I can
they
be
need
stubborn
a new CEO,
as well.
I'm calling it right now.
Yeah, they definitely do. You know, and when people like me who are can be stubborn as a freaking, you know, mule when it comes to, you know, loyalty on stupid stuff, and I won't, you know, and I'm finally moving beyond that loyalty. I guess bad news, but well. And then the final article I wanted to bring up was you wanted to hear about this. This is awesome.
Only if it's cool.
It's very cool. So my favorite companies are getting together.
Oh my gosh, I opened a webpage. I'm so excited now.
Yes, you're right. Basically what happens is they built these. So there's a theme park. It's this team of developers. And they basically what they did is they said, hey, we're going to take a roller coaster. We're going to put like a laptop on it, and we're going to connect an Oculus Rift to this laptop. So they've scripted out these rides that you know based on the path of the roller coaster, where you're like riding along on the roller coaster, but you can't see anything. You're just going through it, and the video is awesome because they've got a couple of different like themes. Like one is you're on like a chariot being pulled by Pegasus, so it, like starts off and like takes off.
Awesome.
I know, it's really cool. It got one where like you're chasing a dragon and stuff, but one of them obviously is it's a space shooter game. You get a little control stick, so you're able to like shoot lasers at asteroids as you're like going around. And obviously, if you're on a roller coaster and you can't see anything, when the spaceship moves, all of a sudden you like, you know, you feel the force of it and everything. And so it's just like you know, as far as fully immersive VR goes, this is pretty up there. it looks really, really awesome. And they had to work through some of the dilemmas of, you know, how does the Oculus Rift deal with the accelerometer, thinking you're pulling G's, and how does it know that, you know, you're looking where you're supposed to be looking and stuff. But they've seemed to have overcome a lot of that, and people are saying it's just awesome. And so my future vision on this is one day you're going to get Disney's going to realize that this is flipping awesome. They're going to figure out how to make this work, but you're going to have a space mountain shooter. You're going to have like a, you know, like you're going to be able to go at it. And oh my gosh, this would be so cool.
They're headed there, right? They've got all the pieces. I think about like the Buzz Lightyear ride where you are shooting things.
Oh yeah, that's right. I didn't think about that.
On there, so you can get points and compete against the person you're sitting next to. They obviously have Space Mountain, big roller coasters. But then they also have the Mission to Mars one, where essentially, I talked about this back in January. You're in the big centrifuge, and it's got a monitor in front of you, and so in reality, you're spinning probably not as fast as I think I am, but crazy fast. And because of the monitor, you think you're taking off in a rocket and flying to Mars. And they've got all these different components. And especially on that one, too, in the Mission to Mars, it's kind of weird because they're like at certain points you're riding with four people and you all have jobs. And at certain times they'll be like, window light starts to flash, press the button, and they make you do it. So there's a little bit of interaction. It doesn't... doesn't actually change the ride.
Yeah.
Which I'm always like, eh, whatever. That was a little hokey. We could have gotten rid of that part and it still would have been fun. But I could see where you are now, like, you're shooting and, you know what I mean? Maybe competing against your friends. And instead of having the screens there, you are using the Oculus Rift instead. I could see where they're retrofitting this on top of other roller coaster stuff. It'd be fascinating too to be like, it's the same roller coaster, but you can choose what you want to do.
Yeah.
You know, do you want to, there's the there's the not so scary, you know, like you were talking about, the going on a Pegasus ride.
Yeah.
Which actually sounds kind of fun.
I don't.
There could be the, you know, the space one. You could have a fantasy type one. You know, you're right, a dragon type thing. You know, I don't know. You can change it up, and everyone could actually be doing a different ride, and you could do the same ride four times, and each time it's different.
Yeah.
And you know,
which would be really cool.
Yeah, which helps with the, it's going to sound weird, but the replay value, the re-ride value.
Yeah.
Of it. You know, or they've got a special Christmas theme now.
Oh my gosh, yeah. That and with you know, that's such a big thing.
Sleigh ride.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know,
oh yeah, I just, there's a part of me that's like, yeah, that'd be huge.
It's an obvious one.
Yeah, and they retrofit you on it, and you're off and running. And again, I think that the control in our hands, I don't know. I feel less good about that, because that's opportunity for stuff to fly off.
Well, yeah, unless you put, like, you know, unless it's like hardware, you know, hard, you know, mounted to the thing, so you just reach out your hands and you have the controller. But then again, you know, an article we didn't talk about today is having the Leap Motion strapped to the front of the Oculus Rift. So it's entirely possible that they'll just say, point your finger out there and that's your gun. You know, move your thumb and you're all the, you know, make the shooting motion and you'll fire your lasers, you know, and you're like, that'd be cool. That'd be really cool, because that's basically what it's going to be like in the future. You're going to be in your tank and you'd be like,
they got to figure out, like, you know, they got to figure out how to gamify roller coasters. And I think this is something Disney could do, especially with their wristbands and stuff now, where it's like, you get badges.
Oh my gosh.
Pins.
Your high score for the weekend?
Yeah, there's a leaderboard.
Or
just stuff where it's like, you rode every single ride with your hands in the air the entire time.
Yeah.
You know, I just, there's some interesting gamifications that they can do that I just, I, it'd make you want to go back over and over.
This is the sort of thing we could totally be Imagineers. We need more people to listen to this show so they can offer us jobs all the time. Onintech is going to go and get paid $1 billion to work. Onin from Onintech is going to go get paid $1 billion to work for Apple. Nobody even knows what he's going to be doing there. He just announced he's quitting his job at Onintech as the chief editor. And then Recode, somebody at Recode is really good friends with an exec at Apple, because everything is leaking through Recode right now, all their controlled leaks. And if it turns out they were right about the iWatch being announced and not shipping till next year, it's like, it's done. They've exhausted their their usefulness.
I like one of the commenters on this article. He goes, I'd wait hours in the sun lined up to try this for 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so true. But yeah, no. There's some interesting things that could be done. Oh yeah. Man. And we're just to the point where we're starting to put together all of that location and wearable technology that it's going to revolutionize theme parks. It's going to be awesome. Our kids will, they won't know, and we're like, you remember when you had to, like, look out?
yeah. You had to patent, yeah.
Can you imagine where they make it seem like, you know, like, what was that one ride? I always called it Gigantor, but that wasn't it. It was, like, the Giant or something. I don't know, at Six Flags.
Oh,
It was, like, one of the tallest, it was, like, the tallest ride or something.
On the west coast, west of the Mississippi.
Yeah. But could you imagine if it, you know, the ride itself is genuinely tall, and I mean, I remember it being very high, but if they were like, and we're going to make it seem like it's 10 times that high. You know, I mean, just, I don't know. You could do different, you know, for those of you who are really not afraid of heights,
that's
for you. I know that sounds horrible to you, but
I can't tell if this would make me feel better or worse. Having something strapped over my eyeballs like that.
I would want them to do a little more experimenting and testing to, you know, apparently they say as long as it's all synced up, it's not going to increase your chances of getting sick. What would also be really interesting too is if somehow they can track your eyes, and or at least have another sensor on you where they can start to tell if you're getting sick, and if so, tone it down on the fly and stable you out. And I don't know. I don't even know if that's possible because you are genuinely still rocking in a roller coaster. But, you know, to do stuff like that to try to dynamically adjust. I mean, that's way down the pipe, I'm sure. But anyways, that's very cool, man.
That is really cool.
That is fun. Definitely. I'm glad I asked about that one. That's cool.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm going to start telling everyone about that. It's going to be sweet.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
Good.
Hey, well, happy Labor Day.
Yeah, you too. It's a good goof off.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Monday.
Yes, I love it. Back to the grindstone tomorrow. Oh, I had a 5-day weekend. It was awesome.
What? Oh, yeah. Lame.
Dad came up and visited.
I can say you didn't have a real 5-day weekend like most of the.
Okay, that's true. I repaired a pipe. Did some inspections and stuff.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah,
it was. That's fun. Cool.
It's my kind of vacation.
Definitely.
Cool. Awesome. Let's go do that fun stuff. Let's see here. I gotta set up all my stuff so I can actually do this. It's not just. And we're calling it. All right. So everybody, thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow. My fully clothed brother. You know, I had the other thought there of like, as a general rule, another way to not have nude pictures leak of you, of you leak, is to not take nude pictures. I know it's a crazy solution, but I'm just putting one out there as a possibility. Anyways, there's my final thought for the day. So everybody, thank you for joining us. We truly do appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed your Labor Day, and we will talk next time. Thank you.